Welcome everybody this evening to the call. It's so exciting. And welcome as everyone is coming into the call. Very exciting. Had an opportunity to reflect on our conversation last week regarding the assessment. We're going to talk about a couple of items that came as a request on emails this week. And then if we have just a few minutes at the end, I want to go into a couple of other thought processes in your assessment report. Now, we're going to use the assessment report tonight, and we will most times when we're coaching. So if you have an opportunity to be close to a computer so that you can reflect, otherwise, if you're driving in the car, just take some notes so that when you go home, you can take a look at your assessment and from that assessment. Those will assist you in better understanding the things that we're going to discuss this evening. A couple of things were discussed. We had a question this week. What is the difference between group coaching and personal coaching? And welcome all those who are arriving with us. Christy, Brennan, are you on the phone with us this evening? Christy, are you with us this evening?
Hi, Dave. It is Christy. I'm here.
Hi, Christy. Welcome. I asked Christy earlier today if she would spend just a moment. We have not rehearsed this. Christy is a personal coaching client, and I wanted to have her take just a moment and just give you an idea. She attends the Tuesday night calls, and she's on personal coaching. We meet each Tuesday afternoon, which makes for a fun Tuesday, Christy. Would you spend just a moment and share with those on the phone the differences, in your opinion, between the group and personal coaching so they can have an idea of the differences, please?
Sure, I would be happy to. You know, you and I have been coaching now on an individual basis for about 3 weeks, and I've done your boot camp, and I've done a lot of group coaching with you, and I have just really enjoyed the one-on-one coaching. I can tell you that there are a couple things for me that stand out that have been really beneficial for me from the one-on-one perspective, and that is, the first one is that you really help me with some individual situations that wouldn't necessarily be brought up in a group setting. So definitely everything's related to what we do in the group work. But what I've really enjoyed is being able to kind of dig a little bit deeper into some of the areas where my thought process. So I think that that's a really nice benefit. The second thing that I think is really fabulous about the...
Let's pause just for a moment. We've got a few people. Press *6, please. We'd appreciate it. That will keep the line really clean. Just press *6. Thank you. And Christy, go ahead. Thank you.
So the second thing that has really impressed me about the one-on-one coaching versus the group coaching is that I feel much more accountable. There's something about meeting with a basis that really basically hold me to the fire, and if you and I talk about doing something and that I am on a path to specific action, then next week I know that I'm going to be talking to you, and I really find that I grow quite a bit because of that weekly appointment. And just in the last 3 weeks, Dave, I would say that I've had some really wonderful, beautiful aha moments, some beautiful breakthroughs. And you're aware of those, and I feel like we're really gaining some momentum, and so for me, just building on the group session and going to the individual coaching has propelled my personal growth and my professional growth beyond what I even imagined that we would get through in the entire private coaching session. So I can only wait. I can't even fathom where I'll be 5 weeks from now when we're wrapping up this first session. So I highly recommend it to folks, but for me personally, it's the individual digging deeper. And Dave, you're excellent at getting down to those issues that might be holding people back, and then being accountable. So that weekly call really holds me to the fire and helps me get things done during the week.
Well, thank you for sharing. And we're going to do our very best to make these Tuesday night calls as individual and as personal as we possibly can make them. That's going to require you to, and Christy, for you to participate. So when you've got a question, just come off of mute, press *6 and say, Dave, say it till I acknowledge you. You can interrupt me in the middle of a sentence. These calls are for you. Let's make them as personal as we can make them. That will require your participation, asking questions, and I'll do my very best to answer them. If it would serve you to coach personally, we only have a couple of openings in the next couple of months, but if that would serve anyone on this line, just call the office tomorrow and ask for Lincoln. You can call him at 801-294-7694. That's 801-294-7694. We're getting just a little bit of echo. Let's have everybody press star 6. Everybody press star 6, and we'll eliminate some of that echo. I want to keep the lines open so anybody can jump on anytime, so we can make this as interactive as possible. And thank you, Christy. It's a pleasure to have the opportunity to work with someone one-on-one and deal with very personal issues that are sometimes difficult to talk about on a line like this, or we want to go deeper into something very specific. So if that would serve you, please let me know. Now, one of the emails that I got this week, matter of fact, I got it. I believe it was yesterday, and the person who sent it will know. And I just want you to know this question comes up all of the time, especially in the busy, crazy world in which we live in. And I chose it as the topic to launch our coaching session this week because of it being such a common challenge. And the challenge is this: how do I bring balance in my life? I've got my work. I've got my family. I've got my companion. I've got my nouveau riche business. I've got all of these things I'm juggling, and how do I bring balance into my life? Well, I'm going to do my very best this evening to roll up the curtain, if you will, and take you behind the complexity of this question, because it's not a simple question, and perhaps introduce you to some things you may not have considered. And I'm going to ask you to be extremely open and know that in your assessment, there is a possibility that you may have a thought process that's not going to like what I have to say in part. Just know that. If you've got your assessment open, take a look at your external world and take a look at the ninth measurement. It's called being analytical. And the third measurement, disciplined. I'm just looking at these two measurements. When these thought processes are out of balance, they threaten our need for discipline and structure. And we can be so busy with so much, and yet there is enormous amounts of time in our day that we're not accounting for. I'm going to do my very best. Now, the person who sent me the email, if your first reaction is, oh, but David, I've got more than I can do. And yes, you do. My goal tonight is going to attempt to give you some freedom so that you can find some time within the time you currently have, if for no other person than for yourself, so that you can sharpen your own saw and be better prepared to handle all those other responsibilities. Whatever you choose to do with the time, I'm going to do my best to free up some of that time for you. So let's go to work. Part of the challenge with this question is at the heart of our why. Why do I want to be rich? Or why do I want to have more money? Why do I want to be more abundant? Now, a great place to look is in the material in the seven laws of abundance. In the first area, the law of intention, and spend some time in the practices section in creating a why. This is one of the great discoveries of the thousands of assessments that we've done and the 15, 20,000 hours of coaching that we've done, one-on-one interviews. I'm going to do my best. Here we go. I want you to reflect with me on what you would do if you had $1 million and you had to spend it in the next 24 hours. You could not invest it. You could not pay off debts with it. You had to spend it. On what would you spend the $1 million? Just pull out a piece of paper. just write down a few things. What would it be? Does anybody want to come on the line and just give me a few ideas what you'd spend it on? What would it be? Now, some of you heard me speak and address this piece of this challenge recently at some of the speeches I've been giving. Anybody jump on and say, what would you spend the money on?
Well,
I can hear you. What would you spend your $1 million on?
I would buy homes and food.
And who would the homes be for?
My family, and then for anyone in need.
Anyone in need. Okay, thank you. Wonderful. Now go back on mute if you would, please. Thank you. Oh, what a great comment. Now, here's a challenge. Almost always, and this is very tender, because I want you to think about this for a moment. Most of the time, when we think about the $1 million, our first reaction is to do something altruistic. That means something that would serve mankind or do something good. I would buy homes for the needy. What a wonderful thing. I would, as one man said to me, buy propane for people in the wintertime who couldn't afford it, or heating oil. I'd buy groceries. And just notice that these things are all very worthy. What we've discovered, and oh, if you could just be open with me for a moment, because many of you have very good hearts. Not many of you, all of you have wonderful hearts. This isn't to question your heart. It's just for you to be honest about your why. The very first thing is altruistic, because quite often we have a worthiness issue about being wealthy. Be wealthy if we have solved all the problems of the world first. That's one of the challenges. Now I want you to play with the same concept for a moment. If I had $1 million and I could not spend it on anyone but myself, I could not invest it, I could not pay off debt with it, I could not help anybody else with it, what's the first thing I would buy? Just write it down on a piece of paper. What's the first thing I'd buy? And some of you might say, as opposed to a Ferrari or a bigger home, or it might be peace of mind, it might be no stress or less stress or less pain. Be open for a moment to this idea that deep down inside, in our most secret of our secret desires, one of the things we want is enough money not to have to work so hard anymore, not to have so much stress and so much pain, to finally be above it all, to be able to escape and avoid the rigors of life. Just write that down, escape and avoid the rigors of life. Now, most everybody on this phone has, and if you look at your assessment, in your internal world, ninth measurement down, goal-oriented, many of you have this thought process out of balance. If you go down just a little farther, you'll see one that's entitled, let's see here, 1, 2, 3, pragmatic. See if it's balanced. I also want you to go to your external world and look at analytical and disciplined in relationship to structure. What happens is that the majority of you on the phone, 97%, have overactive thought processes in this area, particularly analytical and goal-oriented, which cause us to have very vivid visualization. We can see what we'd like to have very clearly, or we can feel it. Oh, what would it be like not to have to get up and go to work and pay bills and mortgages and debts and credit cards and have the home we'd love to have. And that home, wherever that vacation home might be, the mountains, the beach by the lake with the dock and the boat or the path through the mountains, whatever it might be, that place where you could get away from it all. It might be a tropical island for some. I just want you to hear these thought processes. These are your secret, secret, secret desires. Some that are so secret it can even be embarrassing for us to become aware of them. Because of these thought processes being so vivid, same brain chemistry, brain circuitry occurs that would occur if we actually were there. So in our deepest secret desires, coupled with a very vivid thought process, our mind has created what neuroscientists call a mental construct, an expectation. The history of that word, a concrete condition for happiness. Now, here's the challenge. We wake up in reality, not in our fantasy. We may have been thinking about this before we went to sleep last night. We may think about it on the way to work or the way home from work. We may think about it in our private moments. But that's not what we wake up to. We wake up to our reality. Just look around you. The car you drive, the home you live in, the credit card balances, if you have any, your current bank account balances, your investments, your relationships. This is what you wake up to. What happens is very simple. Oh, if I could have this sink into your hearts tonight. Your body is built to protect your expectations. They're so vivid that when reality strikes, the body autonomically, now you've heard me speak of this, many of you, but tonight, let it resonate with your soul. Autonomically, more than automatically, goes into a defensive posture to protect you. You, your expectation from this terrible threat. This thing that's trying to steal your dream. This thing that's trying to take away your hopes called reality. It's not a bear. It's not a rattlesnake. It's just reality. Reality becomes the enemy. It becomes the nightmare. This is a great risk. Then we go to the meetings or we read books and we get all excited and motivated. We start dreaming and thinking about how much money we could make and $10,000 a month, $20,000 a month, $50,000 a month, $100,000 a month. And we get this norepinephrine coursing through our bodies and we get all excited and euphoric and it can even make us cry. And we can hardly stand it. We're so excited to be a part of this. And within 24 hours, reality strikes and we're back in the depths of a low emotional low. Then we get pumped back up again, and then down again, and up again, and down again. It causes us to do this, and here's the key. Instead of living life, we live in resistance and resentment. Resistance and resentment. We've got domestic issues at home, laundry, preparing meals, getting kids ready. We've got work to do, job perhaps, a career if you've chosen one laden with opportunity and you're in direct sales or a network marketing opportunity as a second business and you've got that pressure. You've got all these things you have to do. But life, everything about life is not showing up the way it's supposed to. It is not consistent with the expectation. This becomes a major challenge. Because when we're living in resistance, everything is an obligation. Have to, should, must. The invitation to begin this process It's very foundational. Have we been living in resistance where everything we have to do is a burden? It's boring, it's mundane, it's repetitious, it's work. Do we view everything as work? Or is it time to make a fundamental shift in our life? From trying to seek a place called ease, from trying to somehow get to that place where we're above it all and there's no more stress and no more pain, that place we have seen so vividly in our minds, but which exists only in our minds and no place on this planet. Are we ready to say, I have been living in resistance because it keeps showing up differently than my expectation. I'm giving you some language for this. And I'm going to make a decision today, a fundamental decision, to shift and to choose to live. I'm going to engage in life. I'm going to take my foot off the brake. I'm going to stop living in resentment and resistance. I'm going to engage in life, and as Og says in scroll number 3, that in the Orient, bulls are tested. They're not in the fight arena. They're tested for the fight arena in a certain way. Each is brought before a picador and allowed to charge that picador. The picador pricks them with a lance. And the bravery of each bull is carefully rated based on their willingness to charge in spite of the sting of the blade. When we engage in life, there will be stings. It's just part of life. But if we keep seeking ease, we understand where the bruises of failure and the wounds of mediocrity come from that Og talks about in Scroll 1 when he says, today I begin a new life, today I shed my old skin, which had too long suffered those bruises of failure and the wounds of mediocrity. Today I'm born anew, and my birthplace is a vineyard where there's fruit for all. The bruises of failure and the wounds of mediocrity come from what we call the baseball bat of life. It's a really tragic visual. But when we are trying to resist and avoid life, escape and avoid the rigors of life, and when resistance and resentment, we are getting battered by that baseball bat. And I can tell you, the choice between the baseball bat and the sting of the blade, there is no question which one you'd want to choose. Sting of the blade. Engage in life. When we engage in life, we decide to embrace principles. We do things like all of you are doing right now. You want to figure this out. Something's not working. I keep crashing into this brick wall. Dave, what is it? So we're teaching you principles. You're studying in your material of intrinsic validation, power sessions, of letting go of the need to be right. You're learning all of these things in your material that's in your library. You're embracing these principles. You won't perfect them overnight, but you will in time. So we engage in life. We embrace principles. We choose to connect with people. One of the 6 qualities of an intentional creator. We connect with people. We notice them. We feel with them. We become focused on them instead of on us. And we find the joy that comes from that connection. 4th, we create value in everything we do. We are intentionally creating it. And lastly, when we're in a position, we contribute to the world. Now, in this process, and Christy, you and I were having a great conversation about this morning, we want to separate 2 realities and understand how each one of them functions. Because it's in the transition between these two that our time is wasted. Valuable time. See, there's only 2 places we can be. Present in the now, doing a task, or in our mind, thinking. We're either one or the other. If we're fully present with another person, we're listening to them. We're looking for the good, and we're verbalizing, and we're listening for doors, and we're stepping into their world, and we're taking down their walls, and that flood of cooperation and productivity comes flooding out to us. We're having this amazing experience connected with another human being. We're doing a physical task. We're mowing our yard or trimming or planting flowers. We're doing physical things. We're making phone calls. We're out placing flyers on doors if your business allows you to do those kinds of things, whatever it might be. Or we're in our mind. Well, I want you to ponder for a moment. Which place of the two do you spend most of your time? Which of the two? Present in the now or in our minds? Now, we're always here physically, but we're not always here mentally. So where do we spend most of our time? And if we got someone together who's really close to you, a good friend, we said, where does so-and-so spend most of their time? Are they really present when they're with you? Or is it like they're preoccupied? Is it like they're somewhere else? When you're sitting at dinner in the evening, is it like they're somewhere else? When you're at a party, does it seem like they're somewhere else? For most of us, those people would respond, somewhere else. Well, let's play with this for a moment. Because if we're not here present, the default for where we are when we're in our minds is fantasy, catastrophe, and counterfeit forms of mental pleasure. That's the default mechanism. That's where most of the neural pathways are currently going, 98% to be exact. So let's think about this. If I'm not present in the now, I am going to a place in my mind when something has happened and then what I'll be doing. When I've got $30,000 a month, then I'll be able to do this. And we're spending our time when, then. And because of your thought processes, it's creating expectations every time we're there. And every time I'm present in the now and it shows up differently, boom, my body gets hit with an autonomic response. I'm in that what Dan Goldman calls an amygdala hijack. The amygdala is our fight and flight center of our brain. It hijacks my body. I can be curled up in the fetal position, emotionally paralyzed, unable to move my business forward, my life, take care of children, companions. I am paralyzed. I finally work my way through it. I'm in resistance and resentment. I've got to do this, I've got to do that. Then I go back into my mind, default fantasy, when, then, and I create another expectation, which will create another autonomic response. Then I escape back to my fantasy to create another expectation, come back to reality where I'll have an autonomic response and another amygdala hijack. Our automatic default to fantasy continues to create a perpetual amygdala hijack, this autonomic, negative, awful, cortisol-filled experience. That's one automatic. Let me tell you the other one. Now, I want you to smile when I go here, because this particular thought process called analytical, and the other side of this one, goal-oriented, does not have a funny bone. It doesn't think what we're talking about is very funny. It's not really funny. But we can step back and see how it wants you to function and go, oh, my goodness, no wonder. No wonder. So much of my day is spent in frustration. Well, frustration is the automatic reaction the body goes into because of an expectation that's unmet. So if my default mechanism is to go into fantasy, when I step back into reality, it shows up differently. I'm going to be in this horrible mental condition then that's going to fuel one other thing in my mind. It's called catastrophizing. Catastrophizing. This is when somebody sends you one of those emails that offends you, or a phone call, or you don't get invited to see a friend that or a party that you think you should go to, for an example, or someone that you have on your team decides to bail out, or someone you're going to sell your product to decides not to buy, or you've got a companion who's a little sharp with you and you feel disvalued, whatever it might be. Anybody here, just think about a situation in the last week or two that happened and you just couldn't let it go. You've been to one of those arcades where the little monkey heads are popping up and you got a mallet and you knock one down, another one pops up and knock that one down, another one pops up, you knock that one down. You just keep doing it. It's like that. It's like getting a bad piece of news on Friday you can't do anything about till Monday, and you ruin the whole weekend, only to find out on Monday it wasn't really what you thought it was. Just think about this. Have you been in one of those moments in the last week or two where you've been stewing over something? Someone offended you, or a situation occurred, or a financial reversal occurred, or a bill came that you can't pay, tormenting yourself, as Og says, over things that may never come to pass. This is the natural and most common, along with fantasy, default for the neural pathway that's impacting these areas of being analytical and goal-oriented. Being analytical is a wonderful thing. To be able to be structured and embrace authority and to think about new and better ways to do things and see the risks in new ideas and the benefits in new ideas and how to manage systems and how to appropriately enforce rules. Oh, this is a wonderful thought process. It is a great characteristic, if you will, of an intentional creator. To be goal-oriented, to do what you do because you want to, you get to, you choose to. To act on your own moral authority, doing the next right thing for the right reason. To have realistic expectations of your own performance and to perform with excellence. To have a clear vision of where you want your life to be, one that ignites passion and drives your discipline, focus, effort, and action. To be coachable and open to new ideas that will change your life. To have a clear understanding of the work that's required to actually create those dreams and to have a sense of direction and purpose in your life. These are the measurements of being goal-oriented and analytical. These are powerful pieces. However, when these sabotaging thought processes occur, when we go into this most common, 98% of the time, default mechanism, we go to fantasy, and we use these powerful thought processes to vividly visualize, escape, and avoid fantasies and catastrophizing. My father used to say, "Don't tell me worrying doesn't work because everything I worry about never happens." He was paraphrasing Mark Twain. Many of us spend time, it's as if we enjoy catastrophe. It's as if we want to take life and go, oh, you start thinking about the worst-case scenarios, believing that somehow I'll be prepared in case it happens. Rarely does a worst-case scenario actually happen. So most of the time, we get to have one of those dopamine, norepinephrine-filled sighs. It wasn't so bad after all. Well, I'm going to take you a little deeper for a moment. Because quite often, the reason why we catastrophize is that at some point we did have a worst-case scenario. And we got hit with a left hook of life that just knocked us out cold. And that will never happen again. We will be prepared with every possible counterpunch imaginable for whatever shows up. And in so doing, we waste enormous amounts of time playing out worst-case scenarios for things that most likely will never happen. Our bodies being filled with cortisol, our intuition picking it up, believing there's something that's really wrong and then making it even worse. Fear, false evidence appearing real. I speak about this with such passion because my measurement in goal-oriented and analytical have been significantly out of balance. If I'm not conscious, absolutely conscious, that's where we're heading in just a moment, I can default very quickly into fantasy and catastrophe. Quickly, bang. And if I don't catch myself, I'm a master catastrophizer. I'm a master fantasizer. Master. I can still remember the day I consciously decided I would never engage in that again, ever. Now, I haven't kept the promise, but I'm conscious every time I'm slipping into it. Now, the next piece. Oh, I just want to say this correctly. Someone might say, well, why don't you just get over it, Dave? Get these thought processes out. Why don't you shut them down? I don't want to shut them down because they are so vivid that when I employ them constructively, which I'm going to talk to you about in a moment, when I employ them constructively, I become an extremely effective, intentional creator. And you can too. But you will not be able to do so until you consciously make the decision to stop fantasizing and then catastrophizing. Because the norepinephrine that courses through our body in fantasy distracts us from reality. And the cortisol that courses through our bodies in catastrophe paralyzes us in reality. We are in resistance and resentment. I know for a fact that when I stopped this, I found 3 hours in my day. And I didn't think I had time to blow my nose. There was no way in this world that I could fit in one more thing in the day. 3 hours. So my challenge to you tonight, make a conscious decision. If you're struggling with balance and you're not sure how to balance everything, be open to the possibility that it's not about balancing. It's about letting go of the desire for a place called ease and engaging in life, embracing principles, connecting with people, creating value in everything you do, and contributing to the world. And starting with a mastery of what happens when I leave tangible reality and go into my mind, how much of my time is spent in default going into fantasy and into catastrophe. And the last one, counterfeit forms of pleasure. Pornography, for an example. Very counterproductive to connection with people. How much time do I spend in those three areas? And what would happen if I start to become conscious when I'm going there and I choose a different direction? As Og says, I create a new furrow of thought, a new neural pathway. It's going to take some effort and discipline because this thought process is so powerful and so committed to fantasy and catastrophe. Matter of fact, if you've got your assessments open, go down to the word coachable right after goal-oriented on your internal world and see if it's out of balance. If it is, it's going to be a little more complicated because this thought process is really attached to what it's doing. It just loves it. It loves the drama of it. What's our option? What's the third option? Reality is one. We want to be in reality, connecting with people and creating value. we do want to go into our mind for this third option. We want to avoid catastrophe and fantasy and counterfeit forms of mental pleasure. What is this third door? What's this called? There's 5 hours on this topic in the Seven Laws of Abundance between the practices and the principal sections of mental creation. Little understood. This is where we create a clean space. I call it the sacred space of the mind, a conduit between us and that power that governs abundance, whatever that name is for you. There is a power, and the conduit is through this very place that we often clog up with fantasy and catastrophe and counterfeit forms of mental pleasure. When we keep it clean from those things and we engage in what I'm about to share with you, we can have a conduit open to the power that governs abundance to manifest ideas and impressions, inspiration, revelation, if you will. That is so exciting when we receive it that it ignites our passion. You've heard me speak about this. It lights up parts of our brain. When we're wired for a functional MRI, it lights up parts of our brain we don't normally even use. It's that powerful when it comes. It's wow! Whew, it's like a wave washing over us. And that igniting of our passion, a willingness to suffer for something we love, causes us to come back into tangible reality with a clear vision, with passion that now drives our focus and our discipline, our effort, and our action. We work tirelessly. We are so engaged in life, bracing principles, connecting with people. We wouldn't be in resistance or resentment for a moment. We wouldn't spend a second in catastrophe or fantasy. We are so intent. This can be in terms of our relationships, if you have children, if you've got a business you're building, to have a vision for each one of those, that when you get up in the morning and you look at your to-do list, it's a what do I create, how do I create it, how will this serve on every one of these, from the laundry to prospecting. What can I create? How can I create it? How will this serve? Living in passion instead of resentment. I can promise you, you can accomplish twice as much in half the time when you come to it with that energy. Go into that mental creation piece this week and have a chance. Take some time to read it. It talks about mental rehearsal, where you consciously invite this power to assist you in imagining in your mind what it's be like when you have that conversation with that person tomorrow, when you're in that meeting, when you're making those phone calls. It's a place to rehearse, not scripts, not controlling ideas. We don't tell the power how it's going to be. We invite it to come and instruct us. Somebody say, what are you talking about? It's like a fantasy. It is like a fantasy. If you're fantasizing about a Ferrari, nobody needs to tell you what color it is, how the leather smells, what the road looks like, whether to turn left or right, whether there's trees or a blue sky. If you're walking the halls of your dream home, nobody needs to tell you what kind of tile it should be, or rock, or wall covering, or furniture. It unfolds. It unfolds naturally because there's such a desire to be there. Unfortunately, in fantasy, our desire is to escape there. In mental rehearsal, our desire is to be instructed there, to be taught what it will take to created intangible reality. We don't want to go there and escape to it. We want to go there and get clear about what we're going to create. But it's just as vivid. It is a fantasy, sort of. It's just not one in which we're escaping. We're going to be instructed. It is as vivid. It is as fluid. It is as exciting. Except for instead of creating counterfeit pleasure via norepinephrine, it ignites passion. Passion we bring into reality. It doesn't create that autonomic negative response. Instead, it drives our action. That's simple change. I go into the space to imagine, but instead of escaping, I go to be instructed. Interesting thought. Inspiration. I consciously ask that power in the morning. If there's anyone I can serve, put them on my path and I'll serve them. If we had time tonight, I'd tell you some of the most amazing experiences I've had in just the last 2 weeks. Oh, moving. I'll tell you one briefly. Last week I called a friend. He'd been on my mind for 3 days, hadn't talked to him for a while, sent him a text, didn't get a response. The morning of the next, that was Monday, then morning of Wednesday morning, I called him on the phone. I said, "What is going on?" He said, "Why? Your name is on my mind." And he said, "Wow, this is amazing. How did you know? I just had the worst 2 days of my life." Well, I don't know that, but that power does. Am I going to tie up my mind in fantasy and catastrophe and counterfeit forms of mental pleasure? Or am I going to keep this space open? And every time I'm tempted to go over there, I'm going to know, what can I create? How can I create? How will this serve? Who could I serve today? Put them on my path and I'll serve them. Every time my mind's tempted to go to this negative space, I force it to focus on, who can I serve? Who is it? Who needs me? And then you get an impression and you call and you find out the veracity of that inspired thought. Oh, there's nothing more glorious in the day than to know you just got inspired to call and assist somebody. Your trust in that power grows. That power's trust in you grows. It can trust that when it speaks, you'll act. Do you think it'll put people in your path who can serve you? If when it puts people in your path that you can serve, you act? I promise you that's the truth. That's inspiration. Exploration. You can explore things without making tangible commitments. Oh, what a fun thing. Design a bathroom in your mind. Build a business in your mind. Write advertisements in your mind without making a tangible commitment, without paying a single dollar. Then taking that into mental rehearsal and living and experiencing what it would be like for someone to experience your commercial, your idea. Wow, the mind is so powerful. Just think how long we have been using it in fantasy. Fantasy that results in absolutely nothing but norepinephrine euphoria, driven the first time we get faced by reality into the depths of depression. Catastrophizing, spending our days stewing over, tormenting ourselves with negative things. Or going in there for counterfeit forms of mental pleasure that absolutely restrict and impede our ability to be sensitive to the value of human beings. Why would we spend one more minute there? We wouldn't. However, it just happens to be the default for your neural pathway. Not all of you, but many of you. Most of us, me. We train it to go this other direction. Mental rehearsal, inspiration. Can you feel the power in this? I'm either in physical reality, creating intangible reality, or we're in our mind constructively creating, getting an idea, an impression, inspiration, exploring possibilities, problem solving. It's another one. There's a whole section on problem solving. You'll learn about this thought process that it has no option but to stew over something until it figures it out, right? Well, use that to your advantage. Give it a problem. Let it work on it. And lastly, planning and goal setting. This is where you get your vision. Planning and goal setting is not a to-do list. It's the creation of a vision that is so clear, so clear that you know exactly where you're going and why. And when you have it, you'll no longer live in resistance and resentment. You'll be so excited to jump out of bed in the morning. It's the strangest thing. You can stay up till late at night if necessary to solve a problem, and boom, the next morning your eyes open up and you're ready to take it on. You can't wait to go create the next piece of your dream. This is where you live. Tangible reality becomes your home base. You like this place. You don't always like where it is in terms of this may not be the perfect house or car or bank account or investments, but everything you're doing is to create something better in every facet of your life. While you keep your eyes on that dream, as Og says, above your head. Well, I want to submit to you that this is the core of balance. As Christy shared with me earlier today from a friend who shared with her, there is no such thing as balance. It's called life. We either live it or we resist it. When someone is filled with passion, they blur the lines. They play hard. They work hard. Everything is about creating value in everything they do. And as I mentioned earlier to Christy, that might be a nap. Because you might be tired and you're physical, you're mortal. You might need to take a nap, and so create a nap. Lie down and say, I'm going to zone out for 2 hours, and I'm giving myself permission to do this. This is part of my day. Conk, the best sleep you'll ever have. It's intentional, an intentional nap. It's about being an intentional creator of your life instead of in resistance, trying to figure out how to balance all the things I'm resisting, all the things I have to do, should do, must do, ought to do. Instead, it's about excitedly jumping into everything I get to do. We do twice as much in half the time, which frees up a lot of time. That time could be used more productively. And where I started this conversation, perhaps for you to sharpen your own saw, to go take a walk, take a bicycle ride. If you're a woman, go have your nails done, a pedicure, a facial. Guys, go get a massage, ladies too. I'm going to get into sexist conversations, I'll get in trouble. Don't mean to go there. Whatever it might be, something for you to just be still. Just still. Instead of in that frenetic, non-goal-directed activity, like a chicken with its head cut off, a dog chasing its tail, which is how we react when we're in resistance and in resentment. Well, go back to that mental creation piece and listen to it. Apply this in your life. Go back and listen to the practices section of intentional creation. Get your why nailed down. And if your why has been about escaping and avoiding, really about wanting to get away from all the pain, it doesn't exist. It can be a painful reality to face. It just doesn't exist. It means we're in resistance to life. We don't want to engage in life. We want to disengage. We just want to have enough money that we don't have to do it. It doesn't exist. Those who have money have become capable of handling stress. And the more they handle, the more abundance they experience. You want abundance? Engage in life. Embrace principles. Connect with people. Create value in all you do. Contribute to the world. Make the decision to live. Take your foot off the brake. Put it on the gas. And have a great ride. Okay, we've got just a few minutes. I've shared a couple of these thought processes. I just want you to, in about, I think tomorrow, the day after, in your creation studios, there's brand new creation studios being put up tonight and tomorrow. And there might be a little interruption in your studios. Just be okay with that because you're going to all be upgraded to Studio 2, which has the tools in it. You'll be happy to know that Seven Laws, those you've all purchased it. There's a new program coming out called Becoming an Intentional Creator, the Six Qualities of an Intentional Creator. It's free. For those who have bought the seven Laws of Abundance, which you have, that's a free program. I'm getting ready to drop in the very first segment of that. And as those segments drop in, they just drop automatically into your library. You get to have those. And one of the things in your library is going to be the seven most common sabotaging thought processes that over 90% of those actively seeking abundance experience. We started to go through these last week, and we've decided to actually create that. Matter of fact, when you take the new assessment, the next assessment, the very first thing you're going to encounter is a review of those seven. What are the characteristics, the goal, and where are you? And there's a whole section in there about the affirmations for those seven, the risk report for those seven, and an overview of those seven, so you can spend time on those seven most common. So that will be available to you to finish our conversation last week. It's just going to be in your library here in a couple days. But we've got just a couple minutes. Let me open this up. Any questions tonight about what we've discussed or any other matter? And if not a question, could you make a comment? Did I push a little button tonight? Did I have you consider something maybe differently than you ever have before? Are you finally getting this pursuit of ease and its deadly nature, this natural default to fantasy and catastrophe, counterfeit pleasure, and the need to make a conscious decision to keep the space clean and use it constructively? Any insights that came this evening?
Yes, actually. I remember several years ago, well, maybe not that many years ago, being stuck in a rut where I didn't think I had the availability, and I wasn't allowed to think anything else, and being stuck where it was all negative thought, and it was the only thing I could do to survive. And because I wasn't able to do any living, much less breathing. And so I finally got to the point where I understood that I shouldn't do that. And now with you explaining this, it makes a lot more sense. And seeing where I still need to go, but hey, I've come a long way so far.
Congratulations. Is it an assumption that you were in a relationship that was stifling?
Yes.
There are so many people conditioned for this automatic reaction, this neural pathway into negativity. Oh, it's so deadly. I was raised in a family like that. Bless my dad's heart. Love him to death. His dad was like that, and his dad's dad was like that. And if you've been raised in that or been in a relationship like that, you get to break the chain. You get to stop it. That everyone who deals with you from now on, do you have any children, by the way?
Yes, four. And they all suffered from it.
How old are they now?
The oldest is 31. The youngest is 21.
Still time to pull them in and share with them your discovery so that as they're starting their families, they can stop it now. Because with the knowledge and what we're sharing, it can be stopped if someone chooses to. And what a gift to give a child to teach them how to use their mind constructively and how to be present in the now, how to engage in life, embrace in principles, and connect with people and create value and live in that kind of a space. Can you imagine what kind of a generation we could create in the next decade if we focused on this piece and broke this chain? How many lives could be blessed because of how many lives have been destroyed or will continue to be destroyed if we don't? Consider that. Congratulations for waking up. And this is a much better place to live.
Well, now I have at least some way of having a lantern to show me at least some steps to go towards, because it's like, okay, I got this far, and now what? No clue. So, yeah. This is going to be a lot of fun.
Awesome. Well, welcome to this ride. Anyone else that wants to comment before we wrap up for this evening?
Hello, Dave.
Yes.
Yes, this is Dion. Yes, I'd like to make a comment. You were talking about going to the state where we're fantasizing all the time about whatever, whether it's good or it's bad or someplace that we want it to be. And I can remember last week, actually, catching myself going there, and I started thinking, all right, how do you stop this? How are you going to stop this? And that's what was good about tonight. Listening to you, you gave me some ideas of some things that I can do, some places that I can go to change that fantasy scenario that I get myself into.
Wonderful. Let me review that just very quickly with you. When that happens and you're consciously shifting, go back to the things you've got on your list, pick the next important one, and ask yourself, what can I create? How can I create it? How will this serve others? You are reconnecting with that power that governs abundance. What can I create? Inspire me. Give me an idea, an impression. How can I do that? How will this serve others? And boom, I can promise you that ideas will come. You act on them. You do that often enough, and it'll give you the platform. Very good. Thank you, Dion. Wonderful. Well, we've gone past our hour. If you need to get off the call, we would certainly understand. I want to take, if there's one more person whose heart is pounding and they want to share something, we just want to make sure you get an opportunity to share tonight. This is your opportunity. Okay, have some fun. A scroll that would be helpful in this area is scroll 5. I'll live this day as if it is my last. Scroll 9, I will act now. These are both very powerful scrolls. And scroll 6, I'll be the master of my emotions. Everybody have a great week. I'm so excited. Send me your emails. I love to get your emails with your questions because we want to be addressing your questions on this call. We'll see you next week. Thank you, everyone.